the man she loves. She simply has nothing left. Except us. I wrap my arms around her. But it is not my warmth she seeks. She reaches for Theo and I pass him to her, offering one of the few comforts that remain, pressing him into her arms. She clings to him like a buoy at sea, seeming to draw strength from his tiny body. I pick up the still warm bowl of porridge and bring it closer to her, but she shakes her head. Astrid, you have to eat.
I'm not hungry.
Think of Peter.
I am thinking of him.
Every second, I know. But is this what he would want for you? She reluctantly takes a mouthful and turns away once more.
Emmett was asking for you, I say hesitantly. She raises an eyebrow.
Again?
I nod. He is the boss, and even Astrid will push him only so far. But what can he do to her, really?
Please, Astrid. We need you.
I need you.
Astrid is my only friend in the world, and I am losing her.
Astrid raises an eyebrow, as though the thought has never quite occurred to her. She sighs, then stands up. She takes off her dressing gown, and I am surprised to find she is already wearing her leotard.
Gratitude washes over me. She will not let me down.
Let's rehearse, she commands.
We step outside. It is mid-morning, and the backyard is busy with trainers feeding the animals, performers on their way to practice. The few laborers who remain struggle to mend equipment and put things in place, with a third of their usual number. At the door of the tent, she turns to me.
I don't want to do this.
Is it Peter? Or the baby? Or Metz? I wonder. I squeeze her hand.
I understand. But you can do it. I know you can.
At least she is here, willing to try. I start for the ladder. Then, looking up where the man had hung, my stomach turns. I stop, still holding on to the ladder and staring upward. I wonder if the memory of the clockmaker will stop Astrid. But she climbs the opposite ladder without hesitation. Then, halfway up, she stops and grows concerned.
Something is not right, she says.
Nothing is right. The fairgrounds had not been prepared when we arrived, the earth rough and strewn with debris. I asked about leveling the ground, I say. I've performed here with Goethe a handful of times, gotten used to the rickety apparatus and the way that the slope of the earth changes my fall. But Astrid has not been here since we've come to the town. To her, it is jarring, a disgrace.
Is it the ladder? I ask, tugging on it to show her that it is firmly secured.
But she shakes her head sadly.
It is just everything.
I watch her intently, waiting for her to climb back down and insist on seeing the head of the grounds crew. She might refuse to perform. Then she shrugs and keeps climbing. Even this does not matter anymore. She reaches the top and grabs a bar, nearly losing her balance. It is too soon, I fret. Forcing her back to the trapeze so quickly had been a mistake. But she rights herself. I start up the ladder, wondering if she will need my help. But she holds out her hand to ward me off.
I need to do this myself.
I step away from the ladder and back close to the entrance, standing in the shadow of the tent flap, and giving her space to find the trapeze once more on her own. She leaps without hesitation, seeming to grow stronger and more assured as I watch. I had wondered if the days away from the act or all her body had been through would slow Astrid or make her rusty. But it is the opposite. Her moves are more intense, razor sharp. Once she had held the trapeze bar lightly, with an artist's touch. But now she grasps it like a lifeline. Her moves are punishing, as if trying to break a wild mare or great steed, taking out her anger on the trapeze itself. She vaults through a series of dizzying pirouettes and somersaults. I sense a slight movement of air around me, and I can almost feel Peter admiring her performance with me, as he once had. There is a noise behind me. I turn, for a second, actually expecting that Peter might be standing there. But of course he is not, and the space behind me is empty. The wind howls through the campground, shaking the tarp and making the sound I had just heard once more. I relax slightly. Then suddenly, an arm grabs me from behind without warning. Before I can cry out, someone pulls me from the tent. I jerk away and turn, preparing to fight my attacker. There, in the entrance to the big top, stands Luke. Luke! I blink, wondering if his tall, dark figure before me is some sort of strange dream. But he is here. I stare at him in disbelief. How had he made it all this way to see me? Noah, he says, reaching out and touching my cheek. I throw myself into his arms, and he wraps them tightly around me. I pull him farther away from the big top, behind the shelter of a shed. It is best if no one sees him. How did you find us?
I came to the circus looking for you, Luke says. But you left.
His face falls.
After that, I went back to my father's house. I hadn't planned to, he adds quickly, but I needed to see if he knew where the circus had gone. I didn't want to believe that this might be partly his doing, but I had to know.
I can tell from the pain in his eyes that even after everything that has happened, part of him still wanted to believe in his father.
He denied it, of course, but I found the order in his desk with his signature on it.
Luke's voice is heavy with sadness.
I confronted him with it, and he admitted the truth. Then I left to find you.
I imagine his journey across the miles to reach me. He kisses me long and full on the lips. His face is rough from not shaving, his lips salty and unwashed. A moment later we break apart. Though it has been only a few days, his face looks thinner, cheekbones chiseled. His eyes are ringed, as though he has not slept for days. Have you eaten? You need rest. I search the fairgrounds for a place where I might hide him. He waves his hand, as though the question is unimportant.
I'm fine.
I lean against him, and he holds me close. I'm so sorry I had to leave without telling you.
I knew you wouldn't have gone like that if you had a choice. That something must have happened.
I can see the depth of his concern for me in his eyes. You found me, I say, nestling closer against him.
I found you, he repeats. The question is, what now?
He pulls away from me, straightening, and I see the conflict in his eyes. He is hundreds of miles from home. Will he simply say goodbye and go back again?
I don't want to lose you again, Noah, he says.
And I hold my breath, waiting for him to propose a life together once more.
But I'm going to join the Maquis.
Hearing this, my hope deflates. I have heard of the resistance fighters who operate from the woods, but I have never seen them, and they seem like the stuff of legend compared to the timid villagers. It sounds dangerous, and far away.
There's a unit of them east of here in the Vuja forest, and if I can get there, I can help,
he adds. But that's so dangerous, I protest, lifting my head to meet his eyes. He smooths back my hair.
I'm not running, Noah. You've taught me not to be afraid. For once in my life, I'm going to stand my ground and fight.
So it's my fault, then, that you are going to get yourself killed? I demand, only half joking. Luke smiles. Then, as he takes my hand, his face grows serious once more.
I only meant that this thing between you and me has opened my eyes. I can't sit by and watch anymore. I have to do something. And the work that the Resistance is doing, disrupting communication and the rails, is more important than ever to prepare for the Allied invasion. There's talk that it's coming soon, now that the weather has improved.
He draws me close to him once more, wrapping his arms around me and kissing the top of my head.
I don't want to leave you, though. It's time for something more. For both of us. If you would consider going with me.
To the Maquis? I ask.
Yes. There are some women, too, who are helping with their work.
I realize, proudly, that he is thinking of me, and that I am strong enough.
Would you?
He asks, eyes hopeful. I want so much to say yes. If only it were that simple. I can't, I say, putting my hand on his chest. You know that.
If it's about Theo, we can find a safe place for him until this is all over,
he replies, putting his hand on top of mine and lacing our fingers together.
Then we could raise him as our own.
I know, but it's more than that. Astrid, she's risked everything for us. I can't abandon her now. Once Astrid might have managed on her own, but she can no longer manage for herself. Everything has been taken from her except us.
I thought you would say as much.
His face grows resolute.
I have to do this, though. There is no place for me at home anymore.
When will you go?
I ask. Tonight. If I set out after dark across the hills, I should be able to find the Maquis encampment before dawn.
He pauses.
If only you were going with me.
I know, but I'm not. And so this is goodbye. I wrap my arms more tightly around him. We stand together, pressed close, willing the moment to last just a bit longer. I pull back slightly to peer back toward the tent. I should go. Astrid is waiting for me. He nods. I'm so worried about her, I confide. First losing the baby, and now Peter.
I'm sorry I couldn't do more,
he adds, his voice low with guilt. You mustn't blame yourself. I don't.
Actually, that is the other reason I came.
I don't understand, I say. What other reason could there be?
I should have told you sooner, only I was so excited to see you again.
He reaches into his pocket and pulls out an envelope.
A letter came to the village.
He holds it out, and I imagine the worst. News coming from across the miles. Has something happened to my family? But as I start to reach for it, he pulls his hand back.
It's not for you.
I take it from him anyway, and seeing the Berlin postmark on the envelope, my breath catches. The letter is for Estrid.
Chapter 23. Astrid. 40 feet. That is what stands between life and death, the thinnest sliver of a divide. I came back to the ring as I said I would, and pretended to rehearse for Noah, and leaped as though nothing had changed. She had disappeared from the tent, though, leaving me alone, and so I returned to the board. The movement of flying through the air had once meant everything to me. Now each swing is like a knife through my heart. The cavernous space high above the ring, which had been home, is almost unbearable. I peer over the edge of the board, as if it is a cliff, staring into the abyss of the net below. I tried to kill myself once, after Eric told me to leave. He'd walked from the apartment, ostensibly to give me time to pack and go, unable to bear watching, or maybe to avoid the hysterics he considered so uncivilized. I'd run to the cupboard and grabbed a bottle of pills and vodka, impulsively downing as much as I could of both. I imagined him finding my body and crying over what he had done. But after a few minutes, I realized he wasn't coming back to check. He had already cut me from his life. Instantly remorseful, I put my hands down my throat and brought up the half-digested mess. I had sworn then never to live for a man again. This loss is more, though. It is everything. Pushing the memory away, I leap and try to fly once more. There is nothing left for me here, though. Jump. Let go of it all. The thoughts tick rhythmically through my head with each swing. Unable to stand it any longer, I launch myself back to the board a second time. My legs tremble as I look down. Was this how it had been for the clockmaker? I see him hanging from the ropes with his neck broken, mouth agape, limbs stiff. I could jump, end it as surely as Metz had. If I die here, it will be on my own terms, not at the hands of others. I stretch one foot over the edge of the board, testing.
Astrid?
Noah calls from the entranceway below. Startled, I wobble, grabbing onto the ladder to steady myself. I had been so caught up in my thoughts, I had not seen her return. Her face is a mask of worry. Had she seen what I was contemplating? Or guessed? She does not seem to notice what I've been up to, though. Instead, she motions me toward her, watching somberly as I climb down the ladder. "What's wrong?" I demand as my uneasiness grows. "Tell me." She holds out an envelope to me.
"A letter came for you."
I freeze. Letters can only mean bad news. I take it with trembling hands, bracing for news of Peter. The envelope bears postage markings from Darmstadt, though. I hold it at arm's length, as though its contents might be contagious. Just for a moment, I want to remain suspended in time, shielded from whatever is written there. But I have never been any good at hiding from the truth. I tear open the seal. Inside is another envelope, addressed to me. Not at the Circus Neuhof, but rather my family's former winter quarters. From Berlin. Eric's blocky script reaches out like a hand. "Ingrid Klempt," he'd written, using my maiden name. Not his. Even after so much time, the rejection still stings. Someone, whoever had forwarded the letter, had crossed it out and added my stage name, Astrid Sorrel. I drop the envelope. Noah retrieves it quickly and hands it to me. What could Eric possibly want?
"Do you want me to open it for you?"
Noah asks gently. I shake my head. "I can do it." I rip open the envelope, which is stained and worn. A slip of paper flutters out. My eyes fill with tears as I pick it up, and the familiar handwriting, not Eric's, appears.
"Dearest Ingrid, I pray that this letter has reached you, and that it finds you well and safe. I fled Monte Carlo ahead of the invasion and did not have time to write. But I have reached Florida and found work at a carnival."
"What is it?" Noah asks.
"Jules. My youngest brother, the weakest and most improbable, had somehow survived.
He must have sent the letter to me in Berlin, and Eric had sent it on. I thought they were all... So did I. My heart beats faster now. Jules is alive, in America. But how? Noah asks. I don't know. I reply, scarcely able to process my own questions, let alone Noah's. Jules was managing the circus in the south of France when the war started. Somehow he made it out.
I continue reading silently. I wrote to Mama and Papa for months, but received no response. I do not know if you have heard, but I am so very sorry to tell you that they died in a camp in Poland.
Oh! I cover my mouth to stop the sob that rips from my throat. Though I have long known in my heart my parents could not have possibly escaped, some part of me had clung to the hope that they might still be alive. Now I am confronted with the truth, and it is so much worse.
What is it?
Noah asks. She bends to read the letter over my shoulder. Then she wraps her arms around me from behind and rocks me back and forth, gently.
Astrid, I'm so, so sorry.
I do not answer, but sit silently, letting it sink in that the very worst I had feared is true.
There's more to the letter,
Noah says gently several seconds later. She gestures to the paper that lies crumpled in my lap, pointing to the text a few lines down where I had stopped reading after learning about my parents. I shake my head. I cannot. She takes the paper and clears her throat, then begins to read aloud.
I have not been able to find the twins. It may be well that it is only the two of us now. I know that you do not want to leave your husband, but I have arranged for a visa at the Swiss consulate in Lisbon. They say it is good for 45 days. Please consider coming to me, at least until the war is over, and then you can return. We only have each other now. Yours, Jules.
I try to process it all as Noah hands the paper back to me. The envelope bears official markings from Berlin. Jules had sent it to the apartment Eric and I once shared. Eric must have read it, and then sent it on by courier. Trying his hardest to make sure it reached me. He had forwarded it to my family's home in Darmstadt, knowing somehow that I would go there. But there are no winter quarters for my family anymore, so the postmaster must have delivered it to the Neuhof estate. Perhaps Helga, who remained behind each year to mind the winter quarters in our absence, had corrected my name and forwarded it onward to our first stop in Thiers.
How did it get here?
I ask. Noah clears her throat.
Forwarded from Thiers, she says.
I nod. The circus always leaves the address of its next destination behind for bills and other mail. So many stops along the way. The letter might have never reached me at all. But it had.
My family, I say out loud. I am not sure what that means anymore. The sob that I have held back for so many months rips from my throat. I am crying then for the brother who had lived, and for the so many others who had not. My parents and brothers, all gone. Or so I have thought these many months. But Jules is alive. I remember our goodbye at the station in Darmstadt a few years ago, made hasty by Eric's impatience to board the train. I picture Jules as he must look now, a bit older, but still exactly the same. Somewhere, a tiny part of our family's circus dynasty persists, like a seed carried to a new land to be planted. I look down at the envelope again,
which is thicker than it should be if empty.
There's something else in here.
Two things, actually. I pull out first a bank receipt of some sort, but it is in an unfamiliar language, and the only words I recognize are my own name.
What on earth?
Noah steps forward. May I see it? She asks. I hand her the paper.
I can't read it, but it looks like money for your journey, placed in your bank account in Lisbon.
She hands it back. I stare at her, dumbfounded.
I have no such account.
It looks like it was opened about 6 weeks ago, she adds, pointing to the date.
Did your brother put it there?
I study the paper.
I don't think so.
There is a loan transaction, a deposit from Berlin. 10,000 marks. Enough money for me to get wherever I need to go, including America.
Then who?
I take a deep breath.
Eric.
Eric, having read Jules' letter, wanted to make sure I had the resources to go to my brother in America. He had given me the very last and only gift he could, a chance at escape. I shake the envelope one last time and pull out a small card. A German exit permit, also filled out in Eric's blocky script, and bearing the official seal of the Reich. He had thought of everything, to make sure I could get out of the occupied territories and reach safety with Jules. Had Eric done it out of guilt or love? Though it is a part of my past before Peter, so long ago it seems almost like a dream. Part of me cannot help but ache for the man who cared enough to do all of this, but not enough to fight for us.
Astrid, you can go to your brother.
Noah's expression lifts with hope at the prospect of my finding safety. Then conflict crosses her face as she realizes that she will be left behind.
I can't leave you,
I say. Suddenly, she looks even more young and vulnerable than the day she arrived. How can she possibly manage without me?
You go. Theo and I will be fine, she replies,
trying without success to force the quaver from her voice. Then, scanning the papers again, she frowns.
Your brother's letter said the visa is good for 45 days. The letter took over a month to get here. And there's no telling how long it will take you to get to Lisbon, or to the States from there. You need to go right away, tonight. You will go, won't you?
Noah asks, her voice somehow filled with hope and dread at the same time. Not answering, I start for the train.
But Astrid, Noah calls after me. I thought we were going to practice. Of course, if you are leaving.
It doesn't matter anymore, I finish for her silently.
You go on without me, I say. After all the news, it is really too much.
I walk back to the cabin where Elsie is minding Theo.
Darling boy, I say.
His face breaks into a wide smile of recognition. As I go to take him from her, he reaches his arms for me for the very first time. Something inside me wells up then, another wave of sorrow rising and threatening to break. I push it down. Later, there will be time for tears. Now I must figure out what to do. I draw Theo close, holding him in one arm, the pass in the other, as if weighing each on a scale.
How can I abandon him and Noah?
With Peter gone, they are all I have left in the world. Or so I thought, until Jules's letter came today. Now I must think about him, too. I am the only family he has left. And he worked so very hard to get this visa to me, my one chance at safety. Letting it go to waste would be a crime. Theo swats at my chin with his tiny hand, breaking me from my thoughts. His dark eyes look up at me searchingly. The idea of leaving Noah and Theo alone to face an uncertain fate is unfathomable. There has got to be another way. My eyes travel to the cot. Beneath it, Noah's trunk and mine are lined up neatly side by side. A plan begins to form in my mind. I set Theo down on the bed, then reach for my bag to pack.
Chapter 24. Noah. Watching Astrid walk back toward the cabin, I am filled with sadness. When Luke had first handed me the envelope, I had considered not giving it to Astrid. More bad news would surely break her. I could not hide the truth from her, though. And now she is leaving. I can't blame her. I could see from the conflict in her eyes that the decision to leave us behind hadn't come easily. She has known me and Theo only a few months. We shouldn't matter at all. Not when she has family. Real family that needs her. Part of me wants to run after her, though, and beg her not to leave me. Luke pokes his head around the side of the shed where he has been hiding. "Wait here," I'd instructed him, before racing to hand the letter to Astrid. I did not want her to see him, but I also wasn't ready to have him disappear and leave me so soon, after we had just found each other again. Taking him in now, I feel suddenly guilty. I had lied to Astrid about how the letter had gotten here, but I could not bear to admit to her, on top of everything else, that I had broken my promise not to see Luke.
"Is everything all right?"
he asks. "No," I say. "That is, yes and no. Astrid learned that her parents are dead."
"That's awful,"
he replies, his voice heavy with understanding.
"I thought I was helping by bringing the letter."
"You were helping," I insist. "But how did you get it?"
"A few days ago, I was in the post office when I heard a woman remark about the circus leaving suddenly. She said awful things, that the circus had taken money for shows and fled. I spoke up to tell her she was wrong. When the postmaster overheard, he said there was mail for the circus. He said he had a forwarding address, but when I saw it was a letter for Astrid, I knew I had to bring it myself. I thought maybe it was news of Peter."
His voice trails off, and I can see how guilty he still feels.
"Now I wish I hadn't,"
he finishes sadly. "No, she had to know the truth," I reply. "I'm glad you came. It wasn't all bad. Astrid's brother sent a pass from America. He wants her to come live with him." My voice breaks slightly as I say this last part.
"That's good news, isn't it?"
Luke asks, sounding confused. A lump forms in my throat, making it hard to answer. "I suppose," I manage, embarrassed by my selfishness. I want so very much to be happy for Astrid that she will be safe and free. "I just can't imagine the circus without her," I add. There is a commotion behind us, voices as two of the acrobats walk toward the big top. Luke pulls me behind the shed so as not to be seen.
"Now you can reconsider," he says.
I tilt my head, puzzled.
"You said before you wouldn't go with me because you couldn't leave Astrid."
My mind is still reeling from everything that has happened with Astrid, and I had nearly forgotten our earlier conversation.
"But everything is different now."
Luke's voice rises with urgency.
"If she is going, surely you can too."
In the rush of the moment, I had not thought about it. Luke is right, though. With Astrid gone, there will be nothing to keep me here. I can take Theo and go. Gazing up at the big top and the backyard behind it, though, I feel a tug of doubt. The circus is the only safety I have known since my parents kicked me out. I can't imagine being here without Astrid, but I can't imagine leaving. The circus won't be here much longer, either, I remind myself. Emmett said he was closing it down at the end of the season. Then that, too, will be gone. Noah. Luke's voice is heavy with concern. Once the police realize Astrid has left, there will be questions. There will be more than questions. Emmett will be furious at losing one of his star performers.
It won't be safe for you here anymore. You'll go with me now, won't you?
I gaze at him longingly, torn between the life I know with the circus and the possibility of a future with Luke.
Trust me, he pleads, his eyes round and full.
I already do, a voice deep within me says. Something clicks in my mind, snaps into place.
I'll do it. With Theo,
I add quickly.
Of course,
Luke replies, as though that was never in doubt. Then conflict washes over his face.
But how? If we go to the Potazans, there will be no place for a child.
I could never go without him, I insist.
We'll find a way,
Luke replies, taking my hand.
All of us will stay together.
His voice is certain. Theo is his as much as mine now. I throw my arms around his neck gratefully.
So you'll go?
His lips are on my cheek, then my neck. A thousand small kisses of persuasion.
Yes, yes,
I cry. But a second later, I force myself to pull away. We are together in broad daylight, scarcely concealed by the budding trees. The reality sinks in. I will be leaving the circus with Luke. But before we can start a life together, I have to tell him everything. I can't go forward under the pretense of a lie.
Luke, I have to go now, he says,
not hearing me.
I have the name of a resistance contact about 10 kilometers from here, who can tell me the best way for us to reach the Maquis.
He looks over his shoulder.
I will be back for you before nightfall.
Where can I find you? I ask.
There's a ravine on the other side of the stone quarry, he replies, pointing. About 1 kilometer east. I'll meet you there at 9 o'clock.
But the show will only be half over.
I know, but we have to leave then to make it safely to the Vuja forest before dawn. Can you manage it?
I nod, and he kisses me and starts to go.
Luke, wait!
He turns back. I am desperate to tell him the truth, but his face looks so hopeful I cannot.
I will see you at 9.
He starts off, his step light. I want to call after him again, not ready to have him go. But soon he will be back, and next time I will go with him. As I turn back toward the big top, sadness tugs at me. It is all changing. I have only just found this place, the closest I have felt to home, and I am going, again. I can't help but wonder where it will all end, and where I will be when I can finally stop running at last. The sky is growing dusky pink as I near the dressing car to prepare for my final performance. I watch the other girls, putting on costumes and makeup as though it is any other show. I am relieved. They do not suspect anything. The difference is there, though, in the way Astrid puts on my rosin and wraps my wrists, the same as every night, but with so much more care. Feeling her warm, sure touch on my forearms, I am filled with sadness once more. We will both be going in our separate directions. There was no reason to expect that we would stay together. It's not as if we are really family. The end has come so much sooner than I expected, though. I want to confide in her about Luke and my plan to go with him. But she will never understand. I can't just leave and not tell her, though. Perhaps a note. The other girls have finished dressing now and are heading to the Big Top. But Astrid lingers. She pulls out a bag, softer than a suitcase which I had not noticed before, tucked under one of the dressing tables. She rearranges something in the bag, which is small enough so as not to attract attention. The belongings she will take with her. The lump in my throat reforms and grows larger. You'll send word, of course, to let us know you are safe? I ask, my voice no more than a whisper. She does not answer, but nods slightly as she continues pressing down the clothes, trying to make a bit more room. Of course I will not be here to receive her message. I will be gone, and she will not even know it. Impulsively, I reach to hug her, but she stiffens and holds me back. I flush, slapped by the rejection. What is it? I wonder if I have done something to anger her once more.
I'm not going.
What do you mean? Of course you are. For a second I wonder if she is joking, but her expression is serious, eyes somber. I prepare to remake all of the earlier arguments about how she cannot stay, and how foolish it would be to waste the pass.
You're going,
I repeat. She shakes her head.
You are.
I stare at her in disbelief. I don't understand. Astrid is holding out the envelope that Luke had brought.
You need the pass. To take Theo and go.
I do not reach for it, and her hand dangles in midair. You can't give that to me.
You'll take my Kankata, she continues. The photo is not that good. If you dye your hair, keep your head low, no one will know you aren't me. And you will be able to take a child on the papers.
You can't be serious. I step around her to the bag she has been packing, rummage through. Beneath a thin layer of her own clothes are Theo's cloth diapers and spare booties. She has been planning this all along. Then she holds out the pass to me once more.
You must leave tonight, just before the show ends. There's a train station, not the one we arrived at, but another, about 15 kilometers south. You will take the train to Lisbon and get the pass at the consulate.
She makes it all sound so straightforward, like going into town for bread.
Then use Eric's money to buy a ticket.
She continues on with her instructions, but I do not hear. Luke's face appears in my mind. I am supposed to be going with him, starting a life together. Noticing the hesitation on my face, she stops mid-sentence.
What is it?
She demands impatiently, as if I am questioning her judgment on an aerial routine. The pass is Astrid's one chance at survival, and she is willing to give it all up for me.
I won't take it, I say. Staying here as a Jew is suicide. Exactly, which is why you need to take Theo and go. The pass is yours. You have to use it, I persist, standing up to her more than I ever have. I've thought it all through, she replies, undeterred. This is for the best. It's the only option.
There's another way. I take a deep breath. Just take Theo. That way you will both be safe. The words scratch my throat like shards of glass. I could give her Theo, and then they would both be safe. But letting go of him would kill me.
No. Theo belongs with you, Astrid insists. You're the one who must go.
I am going, I think. With Luke. But of course Astrid does not know this. She is willing to give everything for me. and I am still lying to her.
Astrid, I say slowly, I am going. I don't understand, she says, her forehead nodding. You just said you won't take the pass, so how can you possibly leave?
No, but Luke...
I start. Him again?
She cuts me off, eyes narrowing.
The mayor's son.
What does he have to do with anything?
He's here, in Alsace.
Storm clouds seem to form in her eyes. He brought the letter here from your brother, I add, hoping that it will help. But I can tell from the fury in her eyes that it hasn't.
You promised. No, swore to me that you wouldn't see him again, she flares. Yet you did, even after everything he cost me.
I didn't... That is, I didn't mean to, I protest weakly. Then I stop, unwilling to lie again. I'm sorry I didn't tell you. Luke's going to the Mackie. I wonder if this will make her respect him more. But her anger does not seem to soften.
Then good for him.
Good riddance, is what her tone really seems to say.
On safe journey,
she adds, without warmth. I feel myself growing angry at Astrid. Luke tried to help Peter, risked his own life to bring her the letter from Jules. And yet for everything he has done for us, she still cannot allow herself to accept him. She hates him for who he is. She will never see him differently.
I still don't see what that has to do with you taking the pass, she adds.
Luke has gone to make contact with the resistance, and then he is coming back. He wants me to go with him. There is silence. Astrid staring at me in stunned disbelief. And Theo, I add. Luke wants to care for him as well.
When?
She asks, finally. Tonight. So you were going to leave with him, without telling me.
You were just going to sneak off.
I was going to go after you had gone, I say, as if this somehow makes things better. I'm sorry.
You were going to take Theo where exactly? She demands. You would have no shelter or a transit pass, or even decent papers. There's no place for a child, no one to watch him there for you. What were you planning to do? Carry him as you run around the forest with the partisans?
As she ticks off all of the failures in my plan, now laid bare, I see all of the things that Luke and I hadn't thought through in the rush of the moment.
We'll manage, I say stubbornly. The Zet doesn't matter anymore, Astrid declares. You have the pass now, and you are leaving.
I try again. Surely leaving with Luke would be safer than going alone.
Astrid shakes her head firmly. Getting to Lisbon and out of Europe would be safest. You must be strong on your own now. You have to do what is best for Theo.
She holds out the pass again, as if it is all decided. I start to take the envelope. Then I hesitate, seeing Luke and a life together waiting for us. I hand it back.
No,
I say, hearing the strength in my voice, deciding for myself now. My future is with Luke. And if I go with him, Astrid will take the pass. That way we both have a chance. Her eyes widen with surprise.
How dare you? I've offered you everything, and you want to give it up for some boy?
It isn't that simple, I begin.
I'm telling you one last time. Take the pass and go.
She holds it out to me, her voice cold as steel. The space between us seems to grow. I look at Astrid, wavering. Going with Luke against her wishes now will surely be the final break. Once I would have done whatever Astrid had asked, done anything for her approval. But something had changed these last days. I've been the one who has had to take care of Astrid, make decisions for her, for all of us, really. I can't simply listen anymore. I have to do what I think best. I'm sorry, I say, stepping back. Her eyes widen with surprise, then narrow again with anger. Then she turns away. Astrid, wait! I say, trying again. If only I can make her understand. But she stalks off, leaving me alone. In the distance, the bell rings, signaling the audience to their seats, and beckoning us, one last time, to the air. Chapter 25. Noah. So it is to be the last show. Tears stream down my own cheeks now as the opening music builds to a crescendo and the house lights dim. What's wrong with me? I thought I wanted this, to leave the circus and find a path to freedom for myself and Theo, and have a future with Luke. But I've just found this life, and have only just learned to love it. I am not ready to go.
Aerialists! Trapeze! Someone calls.
I step into the big top, looking for Astrid. I do not see her, and I wonder if she is so angry that she will refuse to perform with me. But a moment later she appears from the opposite side of the tent and starts toward the ring, jaw clenched. I hesitate. How can we perform as a team when she is furious with me? The audience waits in the darkness, though, expecting and unaware. There is no other choice. I climb the ladder opposite Astrid and grab the bar.
Hoop!
She calls, voice seething. I fly through the air toward her. As I release, I see it. The rage, no, the hurt and betrayal in her eyes. Her hands do not reach for mine. She wants to miss, to fail me, as I had her. Falling here would not be as it had been when we were in the winter quarters, or even the previous village. The net has been poorly erected, and the ground below is rock hard. If I fall here, I will die. I close my eyes as I start to plunge downward, away from her. Then something grabs my ankles hard. Astrid, saving me against her own will. But she is a beat too late, and has grabbed the thin part of my instep rather than my ankle, making it impossible for her to hang on. I am slipping through her fingers. Desperately, Astrid flings me in the direction of the bar for the return, with none of her usual precision. She throws me so hard that I somersault through the air. The audience cheers, mistaking near miss for a daring new feat. My arms find the bar. I swing back to the board and clamber up clumsily. As I straighten, I want to end the act there. This has already gone too far. But Astrid waits on the opposite platform, commanding me to finish what we have started.
Hoop!
Before I can answer, there is a boom, followed by rumbling and a louder thud. We exchange nervous glances, the anger between us forgotten for a moment. Air raids are nothing new. They have come since the start of the war, first by the Germans to weaken countries they wanted to occupy, and more recently by the Allies on German territories. They come in crude, bold strokes, not caring who might be in the way. Since our return to Alsace, they have come almost daily. But this is the first time it has happened during the show. The tent has to be the biggest building outside town. Might it make a good target from the air? There comes another rumbling, closer this time. A few guests flee their seats for the exits, as sawdust and plaster shake from the tent poles like snow. The big top offers no protection at all. Perhaps we should end the show and have everyone return home. My eyes lock with Astrid's. Keep performing, her gaze commands. We can't afford to start giving out the refunds that the crowds would surely demand if we canceled the rest of the show. My hands shake as I reach for the bar, and another explosion threatens to send me falling. But I clasp on tighter. One more pass is all that stands between me and freedom.
Hup!
I fly through the air, and Astrid catches me, then sends me back for a final time. Then it is over, and the audience offers a smattering of applause. Time to go at last. I make my way from the big top and cross the backyard to the cabin where Theo and Elsie, who is supposed to be watching him, both sleep. I change into street clothes before picking up the bag that Astrid had packed. I lift Theo, who stirs and watches me with drowsy eyes, onto my other hip. Time to go, I whisper to him, before starting from the cabin. As I cross the backyard, I spot Astrid once more. She waves me over. For a fleeting second, I hope that our performing together might have softened her anger. But as I near, her eyes still burn. She snatches Theo from me.
This I shall miss, she says, clutching him to her breast.
Astrid, I search for the words to make things better between us, but find none.
Just go,
she commands, as she passes Theo back to me. He gives a single cry of protest.
At least I will never have to see you again.
Her words are like a knife, and as she turns and walks away, I know there will be no more goodbyes. I start after her. I can't bear to go with Astrid furious at me, but there is no choice. I told Luke I would meet him at 9 o'clock, just 15 minutes from now. I have to find him. From the tent comes the boom of the music. Emmett's voice warbles over the loudspeaker, so far short of what his father's had been. I look back with gratitude. The circus has been my haven, my safety and my home, in a way I had never expected. Even now, when it is broken and near the end, the circus is the truest family I know. Once I leave, what hope is there of ever feeling this way again? Then I square my shoulders as I start away with Theo. What will he remember of all this? I force myself not to linger as I pass the train cars. I run low so as not to be seen, taking care not to jostle Theo too hard.
Faster,
I hear Astrid urge in my mind as I pick up speed, heading east in the direction Luke had said. I wish for the shelter of trees, but the earth here is barren and exposed. Someone might see us at any moment, ask why I am fleeing. I will myself to slow, walk normally as I struggle to catch my breath. As I start toward the quarry and the laughter and applause of the crowd fade behind me, my doubts about leaving bubble once more. How can we possibly survive? The two of us with a child and nothing more. I push my misgivings aside. I want to go with Luke. I see the image of a life together that he promised. Despite my fears, there would be two of us, united in our struggle for our survival, and Theo's. Without him, I would be alone. Again. We are well away from the circus now, and the earth grows rocky. Slopes sharply downward. I clutch Theo tightly, navigating the steep slope. The path I followed ends at what appears to be a pit of roughly cut stone. Luke said he would be there at intermission, waiting for me. But the quarry is empty. It is early, I tell myself.